Hey, hey, what's good, everyone? You're back with Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. For this episode, we're heading back to Boston to chat with Dan Nicklin of the band Old Jack and Henley Rowe Studios. Dan talks all about how this studio got its start and how it's grown over the years. We look at the amazing work done by the Henley Rowe All-Stars, which features a revolving cast of musicians. Dan and I talk about the new single from Old Jack called Take a Picture and the message it has about social media and mental health. I'd like to start by just asking how this came about, you know, how you came to be a studio owner.
Well, I mean, I've always had a studio. You know, this is the, I think we figured out it's the sixth one I've built. So, you know, whether they were just home studios or, I mean, in this one, to be fair, is a home studio. I happen to have a garage that's, 1600 square feet with 10 foot ceilings. So it sort of changed the game a little bit. And so it's always been a dream of mine. I've always loved producing records, making records. It just was when we moved in here, my wife and I moved in here, we moved out of Arlington where we had converted a smaller garage, but we'd converted that into a recording studio. It just made sense to do it. And it's always been a dream of mine to, and it's not a public studio. In other words, like if I don't know you or you don't come to me through somebody or something, like I'm not advertising, like you wouldn't open the yellow pages if that even exists anymore.
The yellow pages.
Sorry, I'm dating myself here. You wouldn't scour the internet or search Google for Boston area studios and, you know, Henley Rowe would pop up and you'd give me a call and say, hey, I'd like to book some time. It's more a studio for acts that I'm producing or co-producing or writing with. And that's really, you know, that's kind of why no one had ever heard of it. And then all of a sudden everybody heard of a lot because I found myself with my hands in a lot of projects simultaneously. So it was sort of one of those moments where rather than just let it dribble out one at a time, like, hey, let's let the studio talk a little bit about what you guys are all doing too. Because everyone's going to do their own press anyway. So it's sort of extra press, right? And so we talk about a conglomerate or a group of musicians all releasing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably why you hadn't heard of it, if that answers your question. Why all of a sudden you heard of it en masse.
Exactly, exactly. Now, how long did it take to turn the garage into the studio? Because like looking, you guys can't see this, but looking at the studio, it is a massive operation.
Yeah, the good news was the garage was completely and totally bare bones when we moved in. So I think I had lived here, I moved in April, and we were in the middle of our residency at the Lizard Lounge in the first year we ran it, where we were doing the something new, something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue series at the Lizard with the Old Jack residency last Saturday nights. And so we didn't really have time to build. So we were still rehearsing outside of the space. And I think we moved in April or March and we started building August. And I think the first thing that we recorded here was Old Jack's last full length, which was Luck and Drive. We started recording that in January. I guess you'd say it took 5 or 6 months. You know, I met with, when I first moved in, Bobby Logan came over from some studios and we kind of sat out here for 2 hours or 3 hours and talked about what we thought it should look like. And then, you know, how we could utilize the room and the space and the crevices. And then it was just start building, you know, start putting up walls. And again, I had built, you know, 5 other studios, never to the level of this one, but 5 other studios where, you know, so I knew about soundproofing and I knew about materials and I knew about those things. And I built it all myself with the exception of the sheetrock on the ceiling. I brought a guy in for that. Okay. And the plastering, I bought a guy in for that.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that none of the previous ones were to the scale of the one you have now.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have the space. I think if I'd had the space, I probably would have built them to the scale. Also, because of the scale, you know, I've always been accumulating gear. But because of the scale, it was like, okay, well, maybe we need to make the jump and start accumulating better gear. You know, like just sort of, okay, I have 8 pre's or 10 pre's that are really good, but I think we need really, really good, you know, rather than, you know, like, I mean, I had a Demeter tube pre and, you know, we moved up to API. Like, I mean, it was just one of those, like, progressively you make the jump.
Okay.
And that's kind of how it ended up being what it is now.
Man, moving must be so tough to take that whole thing apart.
Yeah, taking Arlington apart was, I guess you'd say I'm a pack rat, but we had a 1,200 square foot house with a garage, and it took like 3 26 foot trucks to get it here.
Dude, that's,
I mean, my wife will tell you, like, I have a speaker problem. Like, I mean, there's pairs of speakers like everywhere. Like, if I find a good pair of speakers that were like awesome, and as a matter of fact, there's a pair of speakers right now for sale on Craigslist that it's killing me not to buy. They used to be at Longview Studio, and it's killing me not to like try to figure out how to buy them. Like, you know, I mean, if money was endless, I probably would already have them, but it's not, so I don't.
But I
come across things, like, you know, I come across things.
So are you the type who's just like always looking for something to kind of tweak and improve and replace?
My wife says I putter. And pretty much everything I do, like, I just will walk around and, like, you know, tweak something, fix something, touch something, like look at something, constantly on the hunt for gear, constantly on the hunt for sounds. I mean, I'm the same when I listen to a record, like, I'm like, ooh, what was that? Like, you know, like what instrument is that? Like, you know, like what makes that noise? And pretty much, curious. I guess I'm curious.
That's a good thing. I like that. Now, of course, this past year has been a brutal one for studios. So many had to close down for so long. And even when they reopened, it was usually under strict circumstances. But given that yours was in your home and you kind of get to pick and choose who you work with, did you have to close down at all? Or were you able to kind of keep things going?
We should clarify here that my studio, I had a studio in Alston in 2001, 2002. We mainly did hip hop. We did a couple bands, like Miss Pigeon, the Halogens, you know, if I name dropped the hip hop guys, you'd know them all, right? All the original Boston guys. And there was just a point in time where I was starting to get a lot of work, and I ended up taking on this band that I really didn't like. And I think I made the decision then that I didn't want to own a studio, like as my living. Cause I was super passionate about music, still am. And I just made a decision that I would, you know, not pursue music as a profession in from the studio perspective, in because I didn't want to ever have to be sitting there. Like, I didn't want to ever have to, like, I was just getting married. I didn't want to ever have to, like, take care of my wife and do a session that made me hate music. does that make sense?
It does. Yeah,
like,
it does.
You know what I mean? Like, take on something that was going to make me hate this thing that I'm so in love with. I didn't want to do it. To answer your question, that was a roundabout way of saying, no, I didn't have to shut down, but I didn't need to keep it open to pay the bills either, right? So, because I have a full-time job that I'm incredibly dedicated to and have been at for 20 some odd years, and it lets me do both, you know? So I didn't have to shut down, but it also was an incredibly creative time. Like, you know, so many projects came out of that, out of people not having gigs to go play and not having rehearsals to go do and not having, you know, where people, where you could send somebody something, they'd be like, yeah, I'll work on it tonight, you know? So that was a very, I feel like from a collaborative standpoint, from the thing that I've always had my eye on, the prize has always been, I mean, if you look at Henley Rowe, it says a private studio built to record a musical family. I think in a lot of ways, the family got tighter during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know.
Just talking about projects. Yeah, I've seen so many people release albums and publish books and do comics during this shutdown, because for a lot of them, they're able to just do their own thing. They said, okay, well, I can't, you know, play out shows, but I have everything I need to record. I'll just make an album, or I'll get my my book done, or so forth. So it's been an interesting year, because I think we've seen just so much art come out of it.
Yeah. I mean, we were jammed up, right? I mean, you know, Will Daly started doing his concert series, you know, 3 weeks into the pandemic. And I think we all thought it was going to, you know, we were going to donate some money to Will and keep him alive for the months that we needed to hang out in the house, you know, and that grew exponentially and really fast. So I think a lot of people wrote, I mean, a lot of people, we did a lot of different things. I mean, I just was with a musician the other day who's playing in the Boston scene for 20 or 30 years. And like, he had to learn how to record in the pandemic, because, you know, he's a great session player who everybody used to call in and be like, oh, can you be here? Can you be here? Come here. And all of a sudden it was like, I have nowhere to go. But he was like, well, I had to like buy gear and figure it out. Like, you know, so I think it made a lot of people pivot.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, you know, I mean, it was scary. It was like, is music ever coming back? I mean, we started, you know, once closed, I mean, so many bars and stuff closed, but the Cantab closed, you know, we started losing these music venues. I mean, the Cantab's coming back. That's great. Once it's got their summer series, and hopefully we'll find another space, and that's great. But I mean, it's, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, I got the financials on the Cantab, just, you know, and looked at it a couple times with a couple other people from Boston, like, oh, do we want to do this? Like, you know, but what if it never comes back? Like, it was scary. But it was, I mean, I think as you watch people come out of it now, I love the camaraderie. But it was funny, yesterday there was a show, you know, I played a show and reached out to a buddy of mine, was like, hey, you coming tonight? Like, he's like, no, I got rehearsal. And I was like, oh, we're back to normal.
Yeah. Like, and normality resumes.
Yeah. And
no one's available to come to your shows.
No one's available to come to shows again. Like, you know, but whereas if you were like first, if you're the first show, everybody's like, yeah, man, I want to go to that first show. And now it's, you know, back to, oh no, Wednesday's is rehearsal night.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that answered your question. I'm sorry.
Man. No, it does. It does.
I roam.
Hey, that's totally cool, man. So do I. I actually did want to touch on that, too, because, of course, now we are seeing the return of shows. We're seeing so many folks announcing summer shows, announcing fall tours. How does it feel now from the musician's perspective? Does it feel like normal is coming back?
Yeah. I mean, and I feel like the audience, not your musician buddies, but the audience seems a little bit more, you know, I still think there's some people who are timid, but the audience does seem to be a little bit more enthusiastic.
Mm. I think one thing that has occurred to me is that we've seen how easily and quickly we can lose it all. Like, not just one thing or another, but, you know, seeing, I think especially in the early days when, like, everything was closed down, the businesses, the venues, the gyms, the theaters. It's like, we've seen how quickly we can just lose everything. The thing that I hope comes of it is a stronger sense of appreciation and not think, oh, well, it'll be here forever, because maybe not.
Yeah, I'll just go see that band next week or next time they come to town. Or, I mean, I'm sure that there are people with like a bucket list now where they're like, you know, I mean, you only have to go look at the Harry Styles ticket prices to go see him at the Garden right now to know that like, you know, I mean, you're in like the upper 300s and it's, I don't know, $2,000 a ticket. like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, who the hell's going to see this show? But I was shocked at, like, you know, it's one of my wife's guilty pleasures. It's Harry Styles, and he made a good record. So it's, I get it. But, you know, I went to, like, surprise her and get her a couple of tickets so she could go with her girlfriend. And I was like, holy cow. I was like, and Jenny Lewis isn't even going with him anymore. Like, that would have been the reason I went, you know. And so I was like, wow. Like, you know, front row seats are like $5,000, $10,000. Like, it's crazy. It's all StubHub, but, you know, but that's how bad people want to go right now to go see something. They're like, holy cow, what if it comes back and I never get to see Harry Styles ever again? Like, you know, people are freaking out.
Oh, yeah. I and my girlfriend were actually looking into shows at Tanglewood, and we would see, okay, shows announced, an hour later, sold out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're doing our Newport Nights show, but I mean, the Newport shows, even though they're on a slightly different format, kind of spread out. I mean, the actual folk shows sold out instantly, just like they always do. So I you know, I think there's some enthusiasm that, especially for the things that, like, people like Newport is something you did every year if you went to Newport. You know, I deferred my tickets this year only because I wasn't sure what the format was going to be and stuff like that. But and I could defer them for next year. So I did that, but the enthusiasm just seems to be there from the folks, especially the people who, like, concerts are their life. You know, I mean, I think about what my buddy, like, Bob McAdam's been doing, like, all year. Because, I mean, you'd see that guy, he'd post a picture in Nashville and then post a picture in, like, Georgia and then post a picture in somewhere else. I mean, he was everywhere just watching concerts. So I have no idea, you know, where people are or what they're doing. But I loved watching people's output.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's so cool to see the excitement, too. Like, I just saw an announcement from Jeannie Santiago that she's doing a show in August, I believe, as part of Once's summer series.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like reading the post off, but the excitement on that post, the excitement that you just see the tone from it, you can tell she is so just jazzed about this. She is so excited and enthusiastic. And I think everyone else is too.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine how much fun, like, the BMAs will be this year?
That's going to be unbelievable.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, how amazing that'll be. I mean, Paul must be chomping at the bit to announce and get the ticket link up. I mean, it's going to be...
That's going to be gone in a flash.
Yeah, it'll be huge, you know, Absolutely. And it'll be a good time. Like, all of us together, like, celebrating, like, the way, you know, the way that we should be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that some folks are a little timid, and certainly... well within their rights. If people don't know, if people don't feel like going out, they shouldn't feel pressure to do so. But from the Boston music scene, from the community, are there some folks who are thinking, maybe I'll wait until, like, you know, October or when things are a little more settled?
I don't know that I think the Boston scene is, from everything I'm seeing, I think people are ready. You know, but I mean, we're lucky. I mean, we happen to live in a part of the country where people are vaccinated. Most people embrace the vaccination. We had availability to the vaccination, you know, and so, I mean, when you read the statistics on people coming to Boston right now, because, like, tourists, because they're like, well, that's a safe place to go. Like, everybody's vaccinated, like, you know. So I think I'm seeing less of it. I mean, I remember a month ago, though, people were like, well, I'm not sure yet. I mean, I'm still seeing a lot of people saying, oh, well, I got back together with the band for the first time. You know, I mean, we're still waiting for old Jack to get a rehearsal down, you know, and get us back into a room. I mean, one of our last members to get his final vaccination was, like, early June. So, like, we just kind of crossed the threshold on the last guy. So, you know, now it's about getting back together again, and start prepping for Newport. So, which is our first comeback show.
Oh, cool. I wanted to jump back just for a bit to Henley Row, because I read about the Henley Row All-Stars, which I gotta say is such a cool concept. It's just this sort of, like, shifting lineup of people, and you put out some amazing music.
Thank you, man.
You're welcome. How did that all get started, though?
Again, it's based on that musical family idea. I've had an idea for years to, like, do a songwriter, studio songwriter thing on, like, Sunday afternoons where everybody just kind of comes in and somebody plays a song and we pick the best song of the day and just kind of run with it and record it. And just put it out that, like, that day. And it never really had a name. I'm not really sure where Henley Row All-Stars came from. I mean, you can see we have hats now, right? Like, so, like,
very cool.
Well, the Henley Row All-Stars hat, and we have patches, and, like, you know, we, kind of embracing the idea. This song with my sister on it, the, Dry Eyes Bye Bye, we had recorded that in late 2019, and it was just kind of sitting around. And then when pandemic happened, I think it was the first couple weeks of pandemic, Chad Raleigh did the, nothing was really happening musically, but Chad Raleigh did the little ditty from The Porch that ended up becoming Never Met a King. If you listen, I mean, that's one of my favorite songs I've ever been part of. But that melody just appeared, and it was like, all right, let's do it. And then we got Chuck and Eric and Chad, who play with Lisa, and Ajda, actually. And they all of a sudden were like, all right, yeah, we'll do the rhythm. We'll be the rhythm section. And from there it was, you know, got Nate involved. And then it was like, okay, well, we need a name. And so, I don't know, Henley Row All-Stars just sort of appeared. And it was part of a concept that I had sort of had, you know, that whole, like, let's get together, release songs. And so, I mean, the good news is that, you know, we have another three Henley Row All-Stars songs, like, in the can or written and about to be recorded. So, you know, in 3 or 4 months, we'll release another set of videos with bands that are recording here, and then some original Henley Row All-Star stuff too. And we'll keep it going.
Nice, because it's
fun. I mean, you know, but we were just like, all right, let's do videos. And so my sister filmed her part of the video, and she lives in the UK. So she did that over there and sent it back to us here. And Derek, who plays an old Jack, who does a lot of our video editing, he's the man. He edited it all up, and he did the Never Met a King video, and then he did the old Jack video take a picture.
I also want to ask about the and this song was from the Henley Row All-Stars, The Show Will Go On. This was released on New Year's Eve with proceeds to support the staff of the Lizard Lounge.
Yes.
Why that particular venue? I mean, I know that they're all definitely neat, but why did this one kind of speak to you?
What, the venue or the song?
The venue. Let's start with that.
Well, I have an affinity for the venue because, I mean, it's been Old Jack's home for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, Old Jack's Last Saturdays has been a residency there for 4 or 5 years. And so, you want to help everybody, right? But at some point you have to just sort of narrow it down and say, I can actually help here rather than, I don't know. I mean, if I had $100 and I gave everybody one penny, yeah, I mean, I could touch 1,000 people, right? Is that the right math? I think so. Mm-hmm. But if I gave one person $100, like, you know, what did I do? So, like, while I would have loved to save the whole community, you know, there are people who have poured me my drinks and mixed my sound for 5 years directly. All the people who sang on that song have all sung with Old Jack or been part of Old Jack's Last Saturdays at some point in time. So I think it just made sense that if we were going to pick a target to try to help, that one made the most sense.
Okay.
I mean, and you know, when I actually reached out to the Lizard Lounge and said, listen, I'd like to give two donations essentially directly to two specific people. And so we did that.
Okay.
Who are people who had helped us for a long time, but they were Lizard Lounge employees.
Okay. That can be your first stop once, like, shows indoors happen.
I would like that for Old Jack. obviously, like, so, I mean, I'm part of a new band called Other Brother Daryl, which is kind of a, well, it's been 10 years in the making, but it's like a Boston, I guess you'd call it like a Boston supergroup. It sounds weird to say when you say it about yourself, but I mean, it's Dave Mirabella, Nate Levitt, and myself, all like writing the songs together, with our drummer, this guy, Dan, you know, and it's all of us sort of writing the songs. I mean, we're recording right now, and Ed V's playing bass. And we have Matt Odabashian from the band Grow out of Providence, playing keys. So it very much, I mean, I guess it is, you know, it's kind of a super group, I guess you'd say, but it's something that's been going on for years, you know, three front men all kind of playing together, and it's big harmonies and everybody sings, and it's a lot of fun. And so that's going on. So that concert we played last night, we played our very first show. So that wasn't our, I mean, we didn't wait for the lizard for that, but I think Old Jack, I mean, we're playing the Newport thing, which we always played, but I would like to come back. I hear rumors about the lizard reopening, and I can't say I have inside information as to when, but I know they've announced Toad will open soon. So that'll be great too.
It seems like in terms of venues, we have done okay. The city's getting back most, if not all of them, you know, of course, once closed, but they're still doing shows and are definitely looking for a new spot. I know Great Scott closed, but last I checked, they had a line on a new location. So it seems like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Carl's been doing a great job with that. I think this city is always, it's a very nostalgic city, right? In other words, like, we're surrounded by history. So, of course, we're surrounded by nostalgia. And I mean, since I've been here, everybody always, like, weeps about things closing. But something new always shows back up. I mean, we're lucky in that way that there's lots of hungry people, you know, whether it's the same people or whether it's people who are changing or new people, or, you know, there's always something closing, but something opening, or if it closes, it reopens as something else, or, you know, there always does seem to be, I mean, we seem to be getting a lot of like larger venues right now, like the Somerville Theater just announced that that they're reopening their ballroom, I guess, mm-hmm. Which will be a 550 seat venue. And then obviously we got the Sinclair, and I mean, we have some really big venues coming in town too, right? MGM at Fenway, and mm-hmm. and you know, I mean, those aren't probably venues I'm gonna play, but I think when there's healthy music going on, then the smaller clubs also typically will come back and open. And I also think the pandemic has opened up, you know, people's eyes and ears to the idea that you can alternative venues, alternative places to play. Like Once's Boynton Yards thing, that's really cool. And I'm super happy for JJ that's happening. And for everybody, I mean, it's not just JJ. She's got a team that works hard. So I think that's awesome. But that's what I mean. There's always fight. Like, even if there's fight left in the people getting their ass kicked, and then there's new people coming along with fight too. And I think that's what makes Boston special. You know, I mean, you got Nicole Tomorrow throwing backyard concerts all summer long. Like, you know, I mean, go Nikki T. There, where there's a will, there's a way, I think. And so, but the city, I mean, look, you know, I don't think anybody was sad about the bathroom at the Cantab, but the idea that they're going to reopen the Cantab without that bathroom is amazing.
but Dan, the bathroom, come on, it's a legend.
It will be a legend. And hopefully whoever the guy is, hopefully he has I read an article on him, but I don't remember who he is, but, hopefully he has a sense of humor and preserves that, like, somehow. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they must make, like, piss-smelled air fresheners or something. Like, you know what I mean?
I'm sure you can find some of that. I'm certain. Hey, it's like you said, where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, someone made it. Someone made it, right? You know.
You know someone made that. You just know it.
Yeah, you can definitely have like shit delivered in a brown paper bag to someone's doorstep. So you can probably find that.
we're definitely going to like maintain the soul of the Canta with that piss smelling bathroom.
That would be amazing if it said on the door, like, I apologize for the smell, but it's part of why I bought this place.
it's just the charm of it, you know? It's the charm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, but people still talk about the troughs at Fenway, which was basically like a larger version of Cantab, but nobody really complains when they go in the bathroom now at Fenway, so.
I think they're just happy to be able to go there again. Like, yay, I get to go in the bathroom at Fenway again. I thought this was never going to happen.
Right. Right, so, yeah.
It's the little things, Dan, the little things.
Oh, baby steps, man. That's what I mean. I think everybody's coming around to it at their own pace at this point. So
yeah, exactly.
You do have those baby steps happening in the community. I think it's really good.
Definitely, definitely. All right. Let's talk about new music, specifically Old Jack's new single, Take a Picture, which I gotta say, I absolutely loved. And the video's, it's a lot. It's definitely a lot. I get the feeling there that there's like a lot of meanings there, and I'm not good at you know, parsing these things out. So give us a walkthrough as to the story behind the song.
Mental health, social media, just sort of, I guess it's, I had a friend call me the other day who's a really cool artist, like painter. And he called me up and he said, I just want to tell you, you know, you sent me this video a few weeks ago and it's taken me a couple of weeks to wrap my head around it, but he's like, I want to congratulate you on making a really good piece of art. You know, he's like, it speaks to your cynicism. It speaks to your sense of humor. It speaks to your, wanting to talk about mental health. He said, it just speaks to a lot of things about who you are as a person. And he was like, and you made it into a great song with a catchy hook and a fabulous video. And it was really nice of him to say that, you know, I mean, it didn't really sink in until the next day. I called him up the next day and said, you know, I really appreciate what you said yesterday. I was actually at a show. I went to go see Angry Gillis and Abby Barrett play. And I got this phone call and I was like, oh shit, I haven't talked to this guy in forever. So I ran out the door and that was what he called me for. He had stopped to call and say that. So that was really nice, but the song is, you know, the song is about sort of there's a visual in the middle of the song that says like, you're sad, you pick up your phone, dopamine, you put your phone down, you're sad again. It's like a circle, like a vicious circle. And it's about opinions and the politics that you see on social media and how people don't communicate with each other anymore, you know, opinions over facts. And like, I don't know. And you just look at the lines. I mean, there's a line about the difference between the mirror and the windows is sill. It's basically like, you can't really, you're constantly looking out at me and projecting. But if I turned it around, like, you can't look at yourself and be honest. Like, and so there, it's sort of me just saying like, and then at the end, it's like, it'll be okay, guys. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're going to be all right. But this social media thing is a problem.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's, you know, and I've lost some friends who were very into social media and who posted daily and had long conversations and all of a sudden we're gone, you know? And you realize that it's like this endless pit and it'll take you anywhere you want to go. And I think that that's really sort of dangerous, especially for somebody who is suffering from mental health. I mean, I'm somebody who suffers from mental health in some ways. So maybe it's autobiographical too, you know, so it was an important song and the words just kind of happened the way all Jack songs do. But the chorus, you know, you take a picture to convince yourself it'll be okay. I think that probably comes from my hip hop roots. That's probably from Grandmaster Flash, New York, New York. Had to get a picture, couldn't make it on your own. You know, there's a line in I don't think it's the message. I think it's New York, New York. Had to get a picture, couldn't make it on your own. New York, New York. But yeah, it is. You know, which was one of my favorite groups growing up. But I think that that line inspired the take a picture to convince yourself it'll be okay line.
Well, talking about mental health, I know that some things can be difficult to talk about, and that's certainly one of them. But when it comes to putting it in your music, do you ever sort of like step back a bit from that? Do you think, do I actually want to put this out there?
No, not in my music. I mean, if you went back through my catalog, there's probably 3 songs about suicide, if not more, that are Deny Me Not is written about Wicked Loneliness, which was a song I wrote the day I found out that like Dolores from the Cranberries had died. That, I mean, if you go back and you listen to that song, that's a song we released as a single probably 2 years ago, just as a single. I mean, it didn't get a lot of attention, but it's very much about getting older and dealing with mental health and how it feels a little bit easier, but then something like happens, like Dolores dying, and it's a trigger for like, wow, this could happen to anyone. Like, you never really outgrow it. You just learn how to live with it. Like, you know, a sadness that exists within you. So, yeah, it's hard. It's hard, but it's not hard to write about. Like, it's the escape. It's the, you know, sing it out, I guess is the best way I could describe it to you. Like, sing out, you know. I was at the show I was at last night at one point on stage. I think I said, just put your heart on your sleeve and yell about it. That's probably why I don't find it impossible to sing about those things. Sorry if that was heavier than you thought it would be.
No. There's quite a lot of
I've lost a lot of people to making the choice to disappear, family and other folks. And, so Deny Me Not's about the position to like, don't deny me my right to disappear.
And the thing is, I think it has to be talked about. I think it is not a pleasant conversation. You know, I think it's tough to be to get that call from a friend who's going through this brutal time. You think, oh geez, I don't know that I can handle this. But I think at the same time, it's gotta be faced, and it doesn't.
Well, there's a lot of weight, right? I mean, it's a lot of weight.
Yeah. When you get that call from the friend saying, I'm thinking of hurting myself or I want to disappear, you think, oh geez, what do I say to this?
Well, yeah. I mean, and there's, I think the reason that so many people have so much trouble, like, and that the natural reaction is, what do I say to this? Is that I don't think anybody knows what the right thing to say is. And therefore, you know, it's hard to take on tasks that you feel like are hopeless, but it may just be that the person needed you to say, hey, they just needed to hear your voice. You know, they just needed to talk to somebody. I mean, you know, I have a friend who battled pretty heavily suicidal tendencies and eventually went on to like work the suicide hotlines. And you know, it's not that she's an expert, it's that she knows sometimes they just need someone to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for a really petty analogy, it's like, I used to sell gym memberships and people would come in and they'd walk in the front door and they'd be out of shape and overweight. And, you know, I'd give them the price and everything and they'd be like, okay, thanks. And, you know, I used to look at them and be like, you just came here. Let's go. Like, you know, let's do something about this. Like, you're here. Why did you come here? That would be the next question I'd ask them. Why did you come here today? What do you want to change? You know? and they would, there would be some reaction to that. It's the same thing, I think, on a suicide hotline. Like, if you pick up the phone and you call somewhere, like, you just need someone to talk to. So, you know, like, if you hear from an old friend tomorrow, or, you know, don't not call back.
Exactly.
That's,
yeah.
Don't. That's the best advice I can give. Like, you know, just like, hey, you know what? I need to call that person back because I have no idea why they just called me.
Exactly. Exactly. Which I think is very good advice. Just pick up the phone. You never know what's on the other end.
Yeah. Tell them that you love them, man. You know, don't be afraid to say, hey, you know what, man, I love you. It's exactly. Okay. Sorry, man. Didn't mean to go heavy here.
No, it's cool. Actually, I think as things are reopening and we're entering, you know, normal, I say that with, you know, the air quotes, I think it's the tendency to slide back into old habits and old thinkings and to get once again proud. Because, like, during this whole time, there was such a focus on, you know, staying in touch with your family. Yeah. Yeah, mental health. You know, call your family, call your friends, because we're all hurting right now. But now it's like, oh, the restaurants are open again and shows are happening. I can go back to the gym and the theater and so forth. I can see my family again. I think there's that tendency to say, okay, well, we're back to normal. I can stop worrying as much because we're all able to go and do stuff. But some people are still hurting in some, whether it's from the pandemic or from a job loss or from something else, some folks are still hurting. So that need has not vanished.
Yeah. I mean, it's, no, it hasn't. And you're right. It's probably, you know, if the focus twists away from the spotlight on mental health, you know, that'll be detrimental, especially considering how far we've come as a society with it, where people can be open about it and have conversations about it and talk about their issues or dealings with it. And so that people who need help know that it's okay to say, you know what, I need help.
You know,
I need something. And so, like, you know, like the end of the song says, man, it'll be okay. Like, you know, it'll, but I, you know, social media is a bad drug.
Yeah. But like you said, it'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many other things I want to talk about out of Henley Rowe. I mean, Census Optimism and Nate's new song and you know, but I guess we don't have time, but that's okay. I love what we're doing. I love that you took the time to watch the videos and listen to the songs and to spend a few minutes here doing this. It's really appreciate it, man. It's such a great community we have and we need, I always appreciate when people take the time to say something about what it is we're doing, you know, because, I mean, I'm not famous, but I am part of this damn community and we're trying to make something happen. So it's pretty awesome.
It definitely is. Of course. Well, folks at home, if you want to learn more about Henley Rowe, they are on Facebook, H-E-N-L-E-Y Rowe. Of course, follow Old Jack under Old Jack Band. And Dan, I am sure we'll cross paths in the very near future.
I look forward to, toasting a glass with you, man.
You got it.
Stay safe, stay well, and again, thank you so much.
Picture this. You finished your first book and nailed it. The plot, the characters, all the twists and turns. This one's a winner, and all you need is the right cover. If you've got my art skills, this is the part where panic usually sets in. Enter the cover villain. Hero to writers everywhere. Founded by noted author Remy Flagg, Cover Villain focuses on composite image covers for science fiction and fantasy writers. Give them the details, and they'll craft a cover using popular trends that everyone will want to see. But wait, you say, I've got ideas of my own. No problem, as Cover Villain loves a good collaboration. As they say, our goal is to put a little villain in every cover we make. Want to know more? Then head to covervillain.com and follow them on Facebook and Instagram.
Hi, this is singer Kate Eppers, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
All right, everyone, that brings this episode to a close. Big thanks to Dan for joining me. It is always a blast to reconnect with someone from Boston. Don't forget to follow the show on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max, and you can get at me at citywidemax@yahoo.com. Listen to the show wherever you check out podcasts, and every Saturday at 10 p.m. on Boston Free Radio. To close things out, I'm going to play the new song from Old Jack called Take a Picture. As always, keep those ears open.
It'll be okay.
Take a picture to convince yourself.